This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
We've got a great Dreamland for you today. Joseph Farrell is going to be with us a little later, but first, a guest we haven't heard from in a long time who is very concerned about the Amazon fires and has some ideas about just what to do about them. Starfire Tor is back with us, and she is here because she is interested in helping in a very unique way with the horrible fires in the Amazon. Some years ago, Starfire came on Dreamland with a method of inducing rain. And I'll let her tell you what happened. Starfire, welcome to Dreamland. Welcome back.
Thank you, Whitley. It's always great to be here. You're talking about a September the 5th, 2009 event and show where I induced something called the Reality Shift Manifestation Weather Modification Protocol. I've been doing it for years, and basically with this, I can modify weather. I can do it by myself if it's sort of small and local, and when it's larger, I have worked with larger groups. But in 2009, I actually, for the first time, I went public with this. Usually, it's been very private for me. I went public, and on Facebook, I posted that I was going to do this, and I explained what it was. Unknown to me, you were following me through Facebook to see just exactly what I was doing. Remember, I'd been on your show since 2006, so you were interested. Anyway, what you witnessed is what happened. I said I was going to do it. There was a fire, and almost immediately, within a very short period of time, rain began to fall. And as we discussed in the show that we did in 2009, the forecast for the area at that time was no rain, completely dry, terrible. But suddenly, there's rain. So, of course, I always provide documentation for this, but because you were a witness to the actual real-time events that I was doing, we did a show about it. Then, in February of 2014, I was on your show again. We were talking about some pretty good stuff. And there happened to have been a drought in California. And you asked me, could I, once again, manifest rain to help out with what was going on with the drought? And I said, yes, I can. Now, this show aired on February the 14th of 2014. But we actually recorded it on February 6th. That's very important. And you actually put this in your public notes on your Unknown Country site. It's very important because shortly after we did the show and I said yes, I launched the protocols and it began to pour in California. Now, since the show that we did didn't air until a week later, I didn't want people to think that it wasn't legit. So you were very kind to make sure that everybody knew that the show was actually recorded before this rain happened. So you had me come back on March 7th of 2014, where we talked about this and we talked about the results. And I don't think we talked about this topic since then. And today we're going to talk about it again because of something that I did regarding reality shift manifestation, weather modification, involving bringing rain to the Amazon rainforest fire, something I know you are very, very interested in.
Yes, I am. I'm interested in and concerned about it because in 1984, I wrote a book called Nature's End, and one of the central themes in it is the fire burning of the Amazon.
No kidding.
Yeah, and the book is set in 2020, so, you know, it's really scary, and the consequences of this are appalling. Well, they're really dangerous. And folks, anybody who sees any fake news telling you that it really doesn't matter, please ignore it. It's a lie.
That's correct. It's okay. Fake news. Well, Whitley on August the 22nd. I was approached by a producer friend of mine, Karen, from YouTube channel The Pursuit of Happiness, and she asked me on my Facebook. She said, "Hey, you know, I would like you to do your manifestation thing to see if you can bring rain to the Amazon rainforest fires." And I gave it some deep thought, and I said, "Yes, I will do it." However, it's such a huge undertaking that I'm really going to need to gather, you know, a lot of people to do this. And Karen got right to work. She formed a group on Facebook called the Amazon Rainforest Mission. And at the time that I actually launched this reality shift manifestation rain thing for the Amazon Rainforest, which was, by the way, August 24th, at that time, there were about 500 people gathered who were involved in this. It was quite daunting. I had to create the instructions. They're very specific. They have to be followed to the letter because they are unique to me, and they involve the core matrix, the brain interface with the core matrix, and coexisting timelines. So it's a very involved thing that's unique to me. And anyway, we launched it on August the 24th. I have the documentation that at that time, there was no chance of rain whatsoever in the Amazon rainforest. But within hours of launching the reality shift manifestation task, it began to pour in the Amazon. And that rain kept falling for over 12 hours. I was so proud of the group that that actually Karen began to bring in. And, of course, I started to invite people as well. And I was so proud of them because not only did they have the faith in me and the concern about the Amazon to do this, but at least half of the people in this group really didn't know who I was. They had no idea what core matrix, coexisting timelines. They had no idea of my history, my successful history of doing this. So I'm so proud of them. Kudos to them, really. Anyway, this this reality shift manifestation task is really an open window, and it will be going through August the 31st. After that, we're going to do something called an astral tagging, which is another side protocol that I have developed. And in this one, I have the ability to actually go after an event, a negative event, and reveal publicly who is really responsible for these fires in the Amazon, who or what, or a combination of. Whatever it is, no conspiracies, no fake news, no presumptions. We're just going to get the facts. I've been working astral tagging for all my life. And I've only done this once before in public. I've done it many, many times with my private research group. And this will be the second time that I'm doing it. It's going to be very successful. And we're going to know what's really going on, because it's one thing to bring rain into the situation, but that's not going to prevent it from continuing or happening again to the rainforest. It needs to stop. The behavior, whatever's causing it, I'm not going to say, needs to stop. And only an astral tag is really going to do that when you reveal the secret.
Can you explain to us what an astral tag is and how it works?
Yes, I can. An astral tag is something that, a gift that I received when I was a child. That's the only way I can say it. And I developed this way. It's a psi gift. It does involve the brain core matrix interface. And I can just rev up my emotions, my spirit, my soul, my brain, my mind. And if I focus it in on some crime, some bad behavior, something that someone has done, it can be a past mystery. going back thousands of years. It can be a current criminal activity. It can be even someone who's trolling on the internet. It can be anything. If I affix my mind on it, what happens is something happens within the astral and dimensional links where an energy force actually tags, attaches to the event, not a person. There's no presumption of guilt. It attaches to whatever the event is that you want to know the truth about. And from there, that tagging, that energy causes a reveal, a public reveal of the truth about everything. If there are documents that have been hidden, they'll come forward. They'll be known in the public. Texts, messaging, anything, witnesses, it will come true. I have worked with many law enforcement agencies over the years to help crack a number of crimes. I do not promote this publicly. This is privately what I do. And like I said, this is going to be with the Amazon rainforest, the second time only that I'm publicly coming out with my astral tag, because I want these hundreds of people, and if more people join the Amazon rainforest mission, they can find that by going to my website, by the way, starfiretour.com. And they can find the link that'll take you to that group. The more that join in, the more powerful it becomes. An astral tag lasts forever. So however long it takes to get all of the information out to the public, that's how long it takes. But it begins immediately, just like a reality shift manifestation weather modification. These are immediate because you're dealing with coexisting timelines and a process called copy-pasting, where you take an element from one coexisting timeline that has a positive outcome, like rain, and you paste it into the current timeline. So you're not destroying or harming anything from a coexisting timeline. You're just bringing it forward into whatever your dominant timeline is. Astral tag works a little bit differently. So I'm like I said, I'm very proud of this group, and I'm hoping to be able to teach this to a wider audience, because I am planning on opening an online school called Starfire Academy.
Okay, and, that'll be fascinating.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that, and I hope you don't mind if I say that I am starting to raise some seed money. If anyone is interested, just go to my website and, you know, the information's there. But I've been wanting to do this school for a long time, where I'm going to teach all about the time shift effect. I'm going to teach all about what I've discovered, how it works. But so many people are interested in learning reality shift manifestation that I'm going to be certifying people to be able to do it. And I'm going to have sort of a think tank, Whitley, where I could take on missions like reigning in the rainforest, or solving crimes, or like I said, solving historical mysteries. It can be missing people. It can be, you know, where's Noah's Ark? It can be anything. It can be anything about ETs, UFO cover-ups, whatever. So I'm so pleased to be able to, you know, move forward in my being able to help people to do this. So it's great to be talking with you about it.
Yeah, and you will have to keep us posted about it, as always. And we're going to, let's hope that this development continues in the Amazon. I see that there is actually more rain predicted, even
that's
though
right.
that's still the dry season there. So
that's us.
Yeah. Well, see, that's great. That
yeah.
is just great. Starfire Tour, thank you very much for being with us. And how do we engage with you? How do we get involved?
Well, the first involvement you can do is you can go to my Facebook page if you just want to know generally about my work and my research. But if you're interested in joining the Amazon Rainforest Mission. Go to my website, starfiretour.com, and there's a link right there to tell you how to get there.
Does it cost anything?
Not a dime. There's no money. I have never in my life charged any money to help people doing reality shift manifestations or astral tags. Never.
Thank you very much for being with us, Starfire Tour. Let's hope that the rains in the Amazon continue. I know that there are many efforts being made on many different levels to accomplish this, but as you heard, folks, from her report on what happened in the past, she's got pretty clear evidence of some kind of a connection between what she does and what happens. Let's hope it happens again and is continuing to happen. Next up, Joseph Farrell and I go down the rabbit hole, and what do we find at the bottom? A labyrinth of mirrors. But hey, what did we expect at the bottom? A labyrinth of mirrors. Okay, folks, no matter what happens today, you're going to have a wonderful time. And as far as what's going to happen today, I have no idea. And the reason is I'm talking to someone whom I have been talking to on this radio program for 15 years, which is going back a bit, almost to the beginning. I'm talking to Joseph Farrell, who has deigned to come back and rejoin the Dreamland clan after a brief absence. Joseph's absences are always relatively brief. I think you all know the author of the immortal Giza Death Star, the immortal, and so many others. I may mention Hidden Finance, Rogue Networks and Secret Sorcery, the Fascist International, Hess and the Penguins, a truly fascinating book about Antarctica. We're going to talk a little bit about Antarctica. In fact, we're going to talk about everything Joseph wants to talk about today, which will be essentially everything, covert wars and breakaway civilizations. I'm deep into breakaway civilizations right now because I'm writing a new book that has got some fascinating personal adventures with a breakaway. So I think they exist. Let me put it that way. Joseph Farrell, before I have to stop babbling and say, welcome to Dreamland. I'm so glad to have you.
Thanks for having me back, Whitley. It's been a while.
It's been too long. I've been sitting here working and running through show after show. And where is Joseph Farrell? Before we take another step, tell us about your new book.
Well, the last book that's out, it's on Lulu. I decided to start self-publishing, and that book is called McCarthy, Monmouth, and the Deep State. It's about Senator Joseph McCarthy. I finally got a hold of the transcripts from his committee hearings from the Monmouth hearings that he conducted in, I think, 1953. And believe it or not, Whitley, the reason I was looking for those for several years, but I finally was able to find them. And I was shocked to find out that they had only been declassified in 2003. And this was under the Senate Government Operations Committee, which, of course, was McCarthy's committee. At the time that it was declassified, it was under Senator Lieberman's chairmanship. But I was just, I have to tell you, Whitley, I sat down and I wrote that book in 2 weeks because when I read the transcripts, which is always, you know, the place to start, I was totally shocked and stunned at what I read. And I decided I have to get this book out quickly. You know, I don't want to be scooped here in case anybody else is reading these things.
Yes, of course.
Because, you know, what I discovered, you know, I was expecting lots of, well, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party or did you know the Rosenbergs and so on and so forth. And I found plenty of that, of course. But what I was just thoroughly, thoroughly stunned at discovering were all of the references in the transcripts to New Mexico in July of 1947.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's awesome. Tell us more.
Well, I don't know where to begin. I started reading these things, And there was a witness, I forget his name, that was called up before the committee, and he had been working on radar as a specialist at Fort Monmouth in New Jersey, which is where we were doing most of our top-secret radar work. And Roy Cohn, who, of course, is kind of the original swamp creature from Washington, who was...
Yeah, he does have a bit of a swamp creature quality to him, I would agree with that.
Oh, yes, sure. Definitely. Well, you know, he was McCarthy's chief counsel, and
right.
He starts out, you know, asking these questions of this witness, and all of a sudden McCarthy chimes in. And he says, and this was in 1947, correct? And the guy responds, yes. And McCarthy goes on to say, July of 1947. And I thought, no, I didn't just read that.
Wow.
And this goes on and on. This is the only witness that that you run into where McCarthy's dropping in July of 1947 and New Mexico. Turns out this guy had actually gone out to New Mexico and was working on radar. And in the course of the transcripts and the questioning of this particular witness, it turns out that he left New Mexico in July of 1947. And I'm thinking, that, you know, there's too many things going on here for this to be coincidental. And then, in addition to that, there are several questions addressed to witnesses concerning communist infiltration of the General Electric headquarters in Schenectady, New York, in the same time period. And I'm thinking, no, you know, because this, of course, was the time period that Gabriel Krohn was the head of research at General Electric in Schenectady.
And, so, and he was...
Know, well, Gabriel Krohn was that very brilliant Hungarian electrical engineer that had emigrated to this country prior to World War II. He was a Jewish man, a very brilliant man. I talk about him in Secrets of the Unified Field, which is another one of my books, and he's the guy that wrote that paper that was published in the MIT Journal of Physics and then subsequently in Europe, won him the prize at the University of Liège in 1935. And what he said in the paper was essentially that we can take the tensor calculus and all of this hyperdimensional mathematics that's used in relativity and unified field theory and use it to explain electrical transients in rotating electrical networks. And what he's really said, if you stop and think about it, is he's really said that we can apply all of these unified field theories right here to the laboratory bench. And he's also said that every electrical circuit is a hyperdimensional thing. It's transducing something from other dimensions. Which,
and
you know,
this is in 1947.
No, this is in 1935 when
35.
He wins the prize. Yes, yes.
Boy, I mean, this is still a deep, dark secret.
Oh, yeah. It, you know, I talk about this in Secrets of the Unified Field, and you know, when I'm reading that McCarthy is probing all of this infiltration at General Electric in Schenectady, I'm just thinking, my word, he has really, you know, you put this together with the New Mexico reference and a bunch of other things that I discovered in those transcripts, including some high financial skullduggery involving Harry Dexter White, you know,
Who is?
Well, Harry Dexter White at the time was the Assistant Secretary of Treasury under President Roosevelt. He was one of Roosevelt's brain trusts. But Harry Dexter White is also the guy responsible for the Bretton Woods post-war financial arrangement, World Bank, IMF, and all of this stuff. And, incidentally, he was mentioned in the Venona transcripts, the declassified Army signals intelligence, as being a Soviet agent. So, you know, you've got McCarthy probing into all of this wartime financial skullduggery that ultimately involves Harry Dexter White. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, there's been other people, Stanton Evans in his study on McCarthy shortly before he died a couple years ago, that it now seems clear that somehow, some way, McCarthy was getting at least summaries of the Venona intercepts. So, you know, and all of this is in these Monmouth transcripts that I'm reading.
Yeah.
So I'm looking.
And just hold on. You know this stuff so well, and you have a terrifying memory, but remind us of what the Venona transcripts are.
Well, the Venona transcripts were the U.S. Army's signals intelligence intercepts that were actually headed by an FBI man. So in other words, this is going directly to Hoover. But these intercepts, by and large, were the wartime American signals intercepts of the correspondence between Moscow Center and Soviet agents in North America.
Which is why we knew so much and why actually
right. There
was. I mean, you know, it's been so debunked and dismissed and sneered at in the media. But mm-hmm. There was a huge communist effort to take this country over in those days.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, in looking at these transcripts, it just became very clear to me that somehow McCarthy is in the pipeline and has access to some of these things. And given the fact that this operation was headed by an FBI man, and given the fact that McCarthy and J. Edgar Hoover met about once a week in the early period of his Senate hearings, I have no doubt that there is some sort of pipeline here, and this is why he fastened in and zeroed in, just to my astonishment, on all of this goings-on in New Mexico in July of 1947, and General Electric headquarters, and Harry Dexter White, and Allied occupation money, financial malfeasance, and you name it. It's in these transcripts, and it's in that book. You know, I'm giving you the Cliff Notes version, but trust me here, folks, the details are just, they're just jaw-dropping. They're just mind-bending. I can't put it in any other way.
I'm pretty amazed already because, like, getting back to the business about electrical fields, what do you suppose they know? Let me go at this actually in a slightly different direction. There's going to be a little bit surprising, I think. But before we do that, Free Dreamlanders, go in this direction. We'll be right back. You think that what subscribers to UnknownCountry.com get is just an archive or a rehash of what you can hear for free? Not quite true. Listen to this.
The Indonesian doctor is writing an article in the 1980s. This is more than 10 years after the mysterious German doctor has died. And now he's writing his recollections of that whole episode. And one of his recollections was that there was a small boy at one time when he first met the doctor in the island of Sumbawa. There was a small American boy living with him.
And that small American boy may very well have been the son of the mysterious doctor that Peter LaVenda is talking about. A special interview called Adolf Hitler in Asia. That boy went on to grow up, to come to the United States, to become a horrendous anti-Semite and serial killer. He was executed in Indiana in 2010. I'm telling you, you don't hear this anywhere else. Nowhere else. So come on, get on the stick. Become a subscriber to UnknownCountry.com. I guarantee you there is incredible information in our subscriber area, and we need you to keep supporting this. It's important. There's no place like it. No other website offers you the amazing riches of unusual and extraordinary information that we do. Subscribe today.
Ever wonder which Whitley Strieber books are available and where you can get them? Now you can go to Whitley Strieber's dedicated book website, Strieber.com, and shop for every Whitley Strieber item that's available. Many of them are available in electronic form, as well as hardcover and paperback. Experience the magic of transformation, the insights of breakthrough, the joy of miraculous journey. Join Whitley on the wondrous journey of that is his life. Thrill to his fiction, the magic of Orenda, the startling power of Alien Hunter, and so much more. Go to Strieber.com now and explore.
We're talking to Joseph Farrell, his website, GizaDeathStar.com. That's GizaDeathStar.com. And just before we left the air for our Free Dreamlanders, I was getting ready to talk about, to go back to electrical fields and to two things. One, there is a a book I'm sure you're familiar with called My Labs, that it was published in 1999, discusses the fact that military abductors use high intensity electromagnetic fields in their work. That happened to me on the night of, I don't know, remember the exact day, not offhand, but in May of 1989, when the implant was put into my ear, it's clearly a MyLab implant. I'm sure of it. There were unbelievable, bizarre electromagnetic fields left behind in the house with no source. In other words, if magnetism requires a source, folks, you can't have a magnetic field floating around in the air like a radio waves. It doesn't propagate. It emanates rather from a fixed source of some sort, either electromagnetic or magnetic. And we had in our garage an unbelievably powerful magnetic field, so powerful that it was keeping the garage door alarm switch from tripping, even though the two switch ends were 3 feet apart. And the alarm man came and showed me with his Gauss meter, it was redlining with this field. And there was nothing to there but the field itself. It was completely invisible. There was no source. And that was the night my implant was put in. So these people exist. This is real. This is absolutely real. And in fact, I'm putting my finger on the implant right now. It's real. So I have to ask, I have to go back now to what may have been known as far back as the 30s about electromagnetic fields. Do you have any hints from those documents?
Well, not necessarily from the Monmouth transcripts, but I have to tell you, I did another book shortly before the McCarthy book called Microcosm and Medium, which is also on Lulu, which is a book about mind manipulation. And I start off actually with an examination of the arts, and in particular music, because we tend not to think of the arts as being a form of this. But I do spend a lot of time with electrical or electromagnetic mind manipulation technologies. And what you're describing to me is almost verbatim some of the other people that I mentioned in that book and what they have described. For example, let me give you the example of a lady by the name of Gloria Naylor, N-A-Y-L-O-R. She had experience with this stuff and was hearing these conversations in her head that she had to commit suicide and so on and so forth. And she sought counseling, and of course that didn't work. But one night, as she was hearing this conversation, as she was laying in bed trying to go to sleep, she got out of bed and walked into the living room, and immediately the conversation ceased. And, you know, this is almost exactly like what they describe in the Cuban embassy attacks. The people would move from one area to another, and all of a sudden, all the noises that they were hearing in their mind would stop.
Yeah, because of the fact that this was something that was coming in from the outside. Yeah,
right.
I had a horrifying personal experience with this. And, folks, you know, you're listening to Dreamland. I'm going to be talking about personal experiences because that's basically, I'm full of this stuff. I'm living this. So, which is fairly cool. I hope you like it. But in any case, this is terrifying. I had a couple of days actually, it was 24-hour days where I was overwhelmingly just almost impossible to resist impulses of suicide. Mm-hmm. Where the hell were they coming from? I didn't have any real reason to commit suicide. I've got a beautiful family. My wife died, and sure, I've been grieving, but I'm not to the point of trying to follow her. I know that would piss her off. In fact, she did not suffer fools gladly. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't something I wanted to do. And yet I was at one point, I was sitting there in the living room, afraid to move for fear I would get up, run into the bedroom, grab my pistol, and blow my brains out. In the middle of the night, there was a blast. The man who lived downstairs shot himself, right? The apartment below me.
Oh, wow.
So that was coming in from the outside.
Yeah.
And there was another person victimized. No one knows why he did it. He lived with, it was a share deal. There were three young people. Maybe he was in private despair about something. Maybe there's all a rational, straightforward explanation. But it scared me to death.
Yeah, one of the things, Whitley, I did in the book is I went and looked at a number of patents on these types of technologies. And I discovered that under the Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA as it's known now, back in the 1970s, they sponsored a project where they would wire people up to an electroencephalogram and mention certain words and record the brainwave patterns associated with specific words. And they compiled what I call an electroencephalographic dictionary of about 2,000 words. That's back in the 1970s. So in other words, they developed this technology not only to remotely read minds, but also to read what they were thinking and then be able to project by modulating those templates onto microwaves or radio waves to project specific words or conversations into people's heads. So this stuff is very, very real. It sounds like the wildest science fiction, but, you know, I've got the documentation and the footnotes in that book.
Yeah, you've got to understand that, folks. You know, we're told to, you know, the minute the word conspiracy theory comes up, everyone says, oh, poo-poo, forget it, it's all BS. They want you to think that because it's not a conspiracy theory. It's not a theory. These things actually do happen. And, you know, free Dreamlanders, something's going to happen right now. And that is you're going to listen to these commercials. And one of the things you're going to do is you're going to respond to the one that says to subscribe, because this show can't go on forever without you. We need money. I mean, simple as that. It costs money to do this. We'll be right back.
Notice anything unusual about unknown country? When you land on the site, you don't see ads about things you've bought or things some data miner thinks you might like. Why not? Because when you come to unknown country, your visit is private. We don't use data miners. We don't report to them. When you come here, we leave you alone, which is as it should be everywhere. Another thing you don't see are video ads that start when you least expect it, pop-ups that interfere with your reading, clutter that distracts you. What do you see? Stories that go in depth, that see beyond where the general media will take you, but don't seek to confuse you with sensation and hoaxes. Plus, a gigantic news archive that's easily searchable with our powerful search engine and entirely free. Unknown country. The internet as it ought to be. The truth that others will not tell you. Want to keep it coming? Join us today. Click on the subscribe tab on the masthead and get started. Unknown country needs you. And you need us. Ever wonder what the close encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
Did you know that pet dogs are routinely stolen from their homes in Thailand and smuggled to Vietnam under atrocious conditions, and then slaughtered for food? Worse, the slaughter is brutal because it's believed that it makes the meat taste better. Of course, there are many larger problems in the world, but not to these dogs, and the Soy Dog Foundation is there to help them. Dog has given man everything he has to give, heart, soul, body, and mind. When he calls to us in need, we have to answer. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the Soy Dog Foundation ad on the left side of the homepage. A $10 gift today can save a dog from this terrible suffering tomorrow. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Soy Dog Foundation.
We're talking to Joseph Farrell. His new book, McCarthy, Monmouth, and the Deep State, his website, GizaDeathStar.com. You can find Joseph's books in a lot of different places. Joseph, where would you most like us to look for your books?
Well, if you're looking for most of the books, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The last two books, Microcosm and Medium and the McCarthy book, are self-published books on Lulu. So you'd have to go to Lulu and look up my name on Lulu and find those books there.
Okay, so we're going to be mentioning that from now on in the show, that you want to find his most recent books there on lulu.com. Okay, so we're in a situation here where we're looking at technology that can be used and probably has been used to do people in.
Oh, yes, I absolutely think so. I think if you examine just the case of Sirhan Sirhan, the alleged assassin of Senator Robert Kennedy, if you look closely at the details of his case, it's very, very clear that this was an individual that was subjected to a lot of this technology and mind manipulation techniques. And he's just but one example. I think you could make a case that Jim Jones of the People's Temple cult was yet another one. There's a bit of evidence that the man that shot John Lennon may have been subjected to some of this as well. So I think you have to look at this stuff and understand that this technology is out there. And there's another thing, since you mentioned your experience with the fields. There's another way to modulate waves into an environment, and that's simply by using the electrical circuitry in a home as a broadcast antenna. This is a technology that can be done, and in fact, there are patents that people have sent me since Microcosm and Medium came out where there are patents precisely for doing that sort of thing. So in other words, any electrical circuitry can be used as a broadcast medium in an area if you've got the technology to do it. You simply modulate waves into the electrical circuitry, and there you go. So there's all sorts of ways they can do this, but the real key here is the existence of those electroencephalographic dictionaries, which permit them to decode brainwave activity and then also to project a template of brainwaves into somebody's mind and literally carry on conversations with people. So this stuff is very, very real. It's a frightening technology, especially when you stop and think, Whitley, that they're coming out with 5G and so on and so forth. You know, we're going to be...
Listen, I'm going to do everything I can to stay out of the 5G world.
Oh, yeah, same here.
Absolutely. I might actually move to the country to avoid it. And, you know, and the reason is this, folks, he's talking about things that have actually happened to me. For example, I've had this happen where two men came up to the apartment I was living in Texas. I was taking a nap in the afternoon, and I suddenly heard this very sinister voice in my head saying that they were going to kidnap me. And, you know, it was obviously not my mind. I was familiar by that time, for other reasons, with the ability to use microwaves to project sounds into people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
And so I jumped out of bed because I knew that the distances were not long, and I ran out onto the porch, which was a screened-in porch with a little cul-de-sac beside it, and standing in the cul-de-sac were two men. Right? They were maybe 3 feet from where my head had been on the bed. These guys turned and looked at me flabbergasted and terrified, turned around. One of them actually had an object, a black object with a silver sort of antenna on it in his hand, and ran back to a Mustang, a car, and jumped in it and drove away. This happened. It's not a fantasy.
Yeah.
So this had it. What I'm saying, folks, is I'm bearing witness to the truth of what Joseph is saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that have had these types of experiences where they have been hearing voices in their head or noises or something, and they move from one physical location to another, and then all of a sudden it stops. And that's a key here, that this technology is there, but it does require, you know, literally aiming it. And once you move out of the target zone, you know, you're relatively free from it. So it is a technology that does exist, but you can fight it simply by moving your location.
Yeah. Well, I found that out when I was at that point. I mean, in fact, there's nothing like running after the people who are doing it to get rid of them.
Right. Right.
It's an evil, there's an evil, something very evil behind all of this.
Well, it's Luciferian, and I'm using that word advisedly. You know, Lucifer means the light bearer, and electromagnetic technology is it's a form of the electromagnetic spectrum. It's a form of light. So what these people are doing and the uses to which they're putting it are Luciferian in the fullest sense of the word, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're right. I think that's exactly what it is. It's certainly terribly evil. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, the specific reason that it's so exceptionally evil, I think, is that it intrudes into private spaces in the human mind and seeks to control them. Other words, it is a direct attack on the free will and integrity of the individual.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So why do they do it? What's behind all of this?
You know, I have wondered that myself many times, and I think there are a variety of reasons, Whitley. One is just plain old narcissistic evil, that there's a certain kind of person that gets their jollies by doing that. But I think the other part of this is, I think in all honesty, particularly now with the internet and the rise of alternative media, with so many people, so to speak, waking up, that's the expression that's being used now. I think that the breakaway people or the so-called elites are just running scared. They're panicking. So they're pulling out all the stops, so to speak, to try and corral people back into their narratives.
Well, you know what's going to happen here? Almost certainly, is there's going to be a massive environmental breakdown. And all of a sudden, this previously docile herd of cattle are going to not have any food to eat, or not a lot of food, and they're going to get angry. You know, every single major revolution that we have had since the French Revolution, and really before that, even in the Middle Ages, the peasant revolt has to do with an interruption in one way or another of either the food supply or the increasing wealth of the middle class. The Shah of Iran never would have fallen if the middle class had wealth had not been interrupted by change in oil prices. It was famine in France, and this is going to happen.
Well, I think there's a possibility that another reason might drive it or compel it, and that is, with this kind of technology, you're looking at what I call a full-scale epistemological warfare, and as a result, people are becoming so cynical of almost any standard institution right now that it could result in pitchforks and rope time. We're getting.
Oh, I think easily it could.
Yeah. Because people are just kind of fed up with the double standard and application of law and so on and so forth. And sooner or later, you know, it's not going to take very much to spark a tinderbox that's going to explode. And this is my worry. I think we've come perilously close in the past few years with certain events in this country. But I think this epistemological warfare is getting so out of hand that people are looking for any sort of restoration of normalcy and stability. And if the power elite keeps pushing as they have been on all their narratives, it's going to get very, very dicey. So I don't even think you have to have a food crisis or anything like that. I think it could be any number of things that would trigger it.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Well, one example that just floored me recently was something that happened in Oregon, and it didn't make the mainstream media, of course, but it was floating around and on the internet big time. And that was the Democratic governor of Oregon tried to force the Republicans, literally at gunpoint, to a quorum so that she could ram through some sort of, I don't know, carbon tax legislation or something. And the Republicans actually fled the state.
Yeah, I remember that story.
In order to prevent this from happening. And she actually ordered state troopers to round them up and force them in, to force the quorum.
Yeah, but they couldn't cross state lines to do that.
Yeah, that's the problem. They couldn't cross state lines to do that. And one of the Republican legislators tweeted back to her that you'd better send bachelors and come heavily armed.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Yeah, I remember it was a very intense situation. And here's another one, folks. This is a very intense situation, Free Dreamlanders. Listen carefully.
Ever wonder what the close encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
This is Whitley Strieber. I'll be at the Portal to Ascension Conference October 4th to the 6th, 2019. Go to ascensionconference.com to find out more. It's going to be a really good show. Michael Tellinger will be there. JJ and Desiree Hertok, Travis Walton, and of course, yours truly. I'll be talking about A New World, the new book that I am bringing out, as well as ongoing contacts with Anne, who is still very much part of this whole operation. Incredibly. What a life. Don't miss me at the Portal to Ascension Conference. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world. Help keep us on the air by subscribing to unknowncountry.com today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab. Dreamland, where wonder is spoken.
Joseph Farrell's website, GizaDeathStar.com. You can and should get his new book from Lulu.com. You can click from the Dreamland show page and go directly to the book on Lulu.com. It's McCarthy, Monmouth, and the Deep State. Obviously, terribly worthwhile. And let me put it this way, it's a completely new vision of Roswell from a direction that no one ever expected anybody to take. And that's only part of it. And I want to go back a
little. Least of all Senator McCarthy.
Least of all Senator McCarthy. As you say, no one would expect to encounter this in connection to UFOs, the Roswell incident, and above top secret black projects, covert operations, or high financial scandal. But that's there. And as I say, I'm sure that the powers that be didn't make that connection either, which is why the Monmouth McCarthy files got declassified in the first place.
And declassified so late.
Well, yeah, that's also true. Admittedly, they did get declassified very late, but it's so extraordinary.
Yeah.
Let me, I thought it would be interesting to ask you. I've never actually asked you this question of what you think happened at Roswell.
Well, in my opinion, you know, I kind of laid out this case in my book, Roswell and the Reich, but I do think that number one, something extraordinarily odd crashed. Number two, I don't think it was extraterrestrial. In fact, I think it was probably Nazi. And the reason why the Air Force, and I'm giving the Cliff Notes version here because I realize that we're limited for time, and I realize what I'm saying
kind
of flies.
We're not limited for time. Don't worry about that.
Well, I realize that what I'm saying kind of flies in the face of the Roswell orthodoxy.
Well, but, that's okay. That's what we're here for. I have my own beliefs, but they don't come to the fore on the show. What I'm here to do is to let you tell your story. So go ahead. Tell away.
Well, I think if you view Roswell in that fashion, and I spent a lot of time, Roswell and the Reich is actually my longest book in terms of actual page count, because I go through the story with a fine-toothed comb. And if, to put it in a nutshell, if you view what happened there as something extraordinary in terms of its technology crashing, and if you suspect, as I lay out the case in the book, that the Air Force recognized that this had a German provenance, then the last thing you want to do is acknowledge that in the public. So they concoct what I call the Roswell dialectic. They release the story about flying saucers and so on. And then hours later, they release the ridiculous story that it's about a weather balloon. And
That was believable even then.
it's just wild and a wild and woolly story. But the thing that for me kind of cinched the case was the fact that you had allusion in the Magic 12 documents, and even in some of the documents that ufology likes to quote, the Shulgin Memorandum, for example, of the Air Force Chief of Intelligence, General Charles Shulgin, puts out shortly after the Roswell incident. If you read that and read it with an open mind, it's really not talking about anything extraterrestrial. He's asking, for example, in that document, well, we've got to find out where the Horton brothers are. Well, why do we need to know where the Horton brothers are? The Horton brothers were, of course, the German aerodynamicists that were building these experimental flying wing aircraft for Hitler towards the end of the war. And oddly enough, they end up in Argentina, you know, building things for Juan Perón.
So, for Perón.
Yeah, for Perón. Ostensibly for Perón, I should say. But I happen to think that with everything else going on in post-war Argentina, that there's a lot of Nazi research projects that are kind of using Argentina as a host country. So that's kind of my take on what I think happened in Roswell. And McCarthy, you know, to bring it back to McCarthy, when he starts looking at that time period and the role of Fort Monmouth in that time period, I think it's very clear that he suspected that these radar operators knew something about that incident. And, you know, McCarthy was actually a very smart man. He had an incredible memory. You know, he sailed through high school in a year. So he was actually a very smart man.
You know, McCarthy knew more than he could prove, and he went off the deep end.
My father was
involved in that whole thing in a certain way, and he thought highly of McCarthy until he literally said, "Daddy said later, years later, when I became very interested in the subject, and you, Dad, had something to do with it." He said, "Well, you know, the man just went too deep, and he couldn't dig his way out."
Yeah. I think it's very clear that that's what happened to him, because the Army McCarthy hearings, the Army kind of set him up for those hearings as a result of his investigations of what was going on at Fort Monmouth. So there's a direct link between these transcripts that I talk about in the book and then the Army McCarthy hearings, which ultimately did him in.
Right.
They had to shut him down, effectively, and do so that what he was probing into would not ever come to light. And it doesn't come to light until the declassification in 2003. So it's a very, very interesting story. But I think that given his association with the Kennedys, his close association with them, given his close association with Forrestal, that there's an aspect of this story that we still don't know. The other thing about McCarthy is that his own contacts within the deep state are very, very weird and odd, not the least of which being the Texas oil man. This is something else I discovered.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, he had all of these connections with the Texas oil men. Well, you dig into Murchison and Hunt, and you discover that they had their own private intelligence network, and that turned out to be General Galen's, Nazi intelligence network.
Right, exactly. So, and you go from there. You can find your way to the Maury Island UFO incident, and then back to New Orleans, and it's a weird, weird world. You know, my dad, I often wonder what part he really played in any of this. He played some sort of a role. The man who had been commanding officer at the air base that Mantell flew from was cashiered. And where did he end up? He ended up on a street one block from us. I used to play with his kids.
Oh, wow.
And here's my dad in this big house on the hill. Across the street, there are a bunch of little houses, in one of which there lives an FBI agent with a very, very fierce dog. And then on the next street, there is this guy, his family, and a lot of men with German accents. So what the hell was going on? Dad lived and died with his mouth pretty much closed. So I don't even know if he was involved, but I'd be surprised if he wasn't.
Well, I've always had an intense curiosity about Senator McCarthy. I never have bought the public narrative that, he was just this paragon of evil out to smear people. But on the other hand, I'm from South Dakota, and Senator Carl Mundt was my senior senator when I was a kid growing up. And, of course, he was well known. He had been the chairman of the Army-McCarthy hearings. He'd been a supporter of McCarthy. He voted not to censure him, and so on and so forth. So, I grew up in an area where you got a rather different take on that whole era than you did in the rest of the country. So I was always intensely curious about the man. But, the last thing I was expecting to find in those transcripts were all of these, and you can tell that McCarthy's biting his tongue. He's mentioning Roswell, but by not mentioning it, by constantly referring to the time period and so on
right.
and so forth. But, the last thing I was expecting to find was what I found in those transcripts. The details in them are just mind-blowing when you put it all in the context of ufology and, the death of James Forrestal and his association with the Kennedys and their interest in the UFO file and so on and so forth. So, it's a Pandora's box that book opens up.
Yeah, it does, and let's get back to there's a very complex connection between certain people in the Texas oil business and Nazis that goes back and probably predates the fact that there were Africa Corps personnel, including many officers, who were kept in Texas. After they were captured and interacted with a lot of these people very extensively. And do you know anything about – I almost don't know how to ask the question, because the fact that they were even there in Edna in Kennedy, Texas, is almost been wiped off the surface of the earth, as has the fact that members of the German-American Bund, Texas Germans, who did not renounce Hitler – ended up in those camps as well.
Right.
So all of that is so deeply hidden, but underneath it, there's more, and it gets back to all kinds of strange, strange stuff about the relationship between these Nazis and the oil men in Texas and their fear of and hatred of communism. Mm-hmm. And do you have anything to add to that? I'm being very confused here because I actually am very confused.
Well, I did talk about the relationship with the Nazis with Murchison and Hunt in my book LBJ and the Conspiracy to Kill Kennedy. In fact, I spent some time with it because I was astonished to learn, and it was actually Professor Peter Dale Scott that uncovered this connection in his book Deep Politics between the Hunts and Murchison and General Galen's network. General Galen was the German general during the Second World War that was in charge of the military intelligence unit of the Wehrmacht on the Eastern Front. So, you know, he headed a very large, extensive intelligence organization throughout the war. And at the end of the war, he approached the American General Siebert and worked out an agreement. And I ultimately think that Alan Dulles had to have been involved with this, given the fact that Galen, when he retired, was given a big banquet in this country. Galen basically rolled that intelligence network over after the war under American control, but with the understanding, and he even writes about this in his memoirs, but with the understanding that should any conflict of interest occur between American and German interests, that it was to be understood that that network would serve German interests first. And that network that Galen ran after the war was rolled into the West German intelligence, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, which is basically saying that the historical roots of modern-day German intelligence are this wartime Nazi military intelligence organization. Pardon me. It's that organization that Murchison and the Hunts are connected to. And I strongly suspect that the liaison between those oil men and that organization in West Germany was George de Morenschild, because de Morenschild, who many people suspect was the CIA spy, I suspect was actually a BND spy, a West German spy. And he, of course, he was a white Russian. He was of German extraction. And he came from a town in Belorussia called Mozyr, which is not too far from Minsk, where Lee Harvey Oswald ends up. So I've even speculated in that book that the human on-the-ground intelligence that is actually running Oswald into and then out of the Soviet Union is West German intelligence acting as agent for the CIA, because they're the ones with agents actually in place behind the Iron Curtain. So, you know, I have a rather different spin on that relationship, but ultimately I think the connection is de Morenschild, and probably de Morenschild is liaising in some form or fashion with Otto Skorzeny, the SS commando that was based in Madrid, Spain. He had his own network.
Yes, and Skorzeny in of himself was a remarkable man. Free Dreamlanders, we got to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Say yes to Serious Wonder. Unknown Country offers so much. Free Dreamland, a free weekly newsletter. Free daily news, a thriving free message board. But it all depends on you becoming a subscriber. And you get so much more. Dreamland and special interview archives going back years. Vintage Dreamland from the broadcast days. Live chats with our extraordinary guests. So say yes to Serious Wonder. Click on that subscribe tab on Unknown Country today.
The key, the mystery, the wonder. Now in a powerful new edition from Tarcher Penguin, Whitley Strieber updates the thrilling story with new revelations. Even the master of the key's most incredible predictions are coming true. We've discovered that there are many universes besides our own. He predicted this in 1998. He described how intelligent machines could be built. We're doing it now. If you love The Key, you need this new edition. And if you've never read it before, don't miss this beautiful book filled with true wisdom and true revelations. The Key is unique in this world. Graham Hancock says, consider its messages, and you'll find it has worked a kind of magic on you. The Key, a selection of the Quality Paperback Book Club, the Book of the Month Club, and the One Spirit Book Club. Available in paperbacks everywhere and online in all ebook formats.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world, but you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
We're talking to Joseph Farrell. You can reach Joseph Farrell on GizaDeathStar.com. Joseph has been on Dreamland a few times, starting in 2006, I would say just a few. And it has always been incredibly interesting. It is incredibly interesting now. You can get his new book, McCarthy, Monmouth, and the Deep State, on Lulu.com. And the simplest way to do that is to go to the Dreamland show page on Unknown Country and click through right from there, and you will arrive in at Lulu.com. And I urge you to make a special effort here, because Joseph has now gone into the same world I'm in, which is self-publishing, for a whole lot of different reasons, similar to the reasons that I moved into self-publishing, at least for my nonfiction books. And so do go to Lulu.com and look, search on Joseph Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, and look at what he's got to offer, because it's incredible stuff. Okay, Joseph. Now let's get back to you. We brushed past Kennedy just a moment ago. We can't just brush past it, because you have one of the most interesting takes on Kennedy that that I know, on the Kennedy assassination. Why don't you run through that with us again? Just the Cliff Notes version. I don't want you to have to do the whole thing all over again, because you've done it a few times in your life, I think.
Well, my take on the Kennedy assassination is, to boil it down to its most basic form, is that all of the researchers out there who have explored this or that facet of which groups were involved are all essentially correct. In other words, I think the subtitle to the book is The Coalescence of Interests, and that indeed is what I think happened in the assassination. It was a deep state operation in every form and fashion. It was it included mafia involvement. It included the expatriate Cuban exilees. It included the CIA. It included the Texas oil man. It included the bankers. It included the military. They all have a motivation for perpetrating the crime. And the key to me, Whitley, that I think kind of unlocks this is, if you look at the seven commissioners that are members of the Warren Commission, Gerald Ford, Chief Justice Warren, Alan Dulles, and so on.
The fact that Alan Dulles is there is appalling to me. To me, that's the smoking gun.
Yeah, that's the smoking gun. But if you look at all of them, each one of them has their own factional connection to one, if not more, of those factions at the same time. John J. McCloy is on the Warren Commission. And they each have their own connections to these various factions that various researchers have fingered or tried to say was the faction that pulled it off. My take is different in that I don't think that there's any one faction that's behind it. I think it's a coalescence of all of them. But in order to pull it off, and this is the key, in order to pull it off and make it stick, you have to be able to control the cover-up. And that's where things narrow considerably, because in order to do that, you have to have a person in power willing and able to do that. That would be Lyndon Johnson. You have to have the deep state control of the media, which should be represented by the CIA and so on. So I think if you're looking for the ringleaders, so to speak, you have to look there in order to pull something like that off. But all of them, I think, are involved at some level. The Mafia, the Skorzeny group, and so on, providing some of the actual shooters, and so on and so forth. And there, if you look at the pattern of witness killings after the assassination, yet another pattern emerges, and that is, I think, that each faction was responsible for cleaning up in its own jurisdiction, so to speak.
They're so, that well organized, aren't they?
Yeah, they were very, very well organized. Yeah.
Well, you know, the only thing I have personally about it is that my father's brother-in-law was, I believe he was actually still chairman of the Democratic Party at that time in Texas. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure he was. And Dad was terribly upset about Kennedy in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And to the point that he called me before I guess it was the day before Kennedy was in Dallas, and told me, I was at St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland, and told me to go down to Washington and stay with my uncle. I had another uncle who was there who had been in the State Department during Eisenhower's administration and was now working as a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. And of course, I didn't know why I should leave school all of a sudden in the middle of classes, and so I didn't go. And then there came the story the next day, or that maybe a day later, about the assassination. And I thought, oh my God, Daddy knew about it. And I asked him, and he said, no, I did not know about it. What was so frightening to me and to his brother-in-law was the fact that Kennedy had refused a closed car. Yep. And he was going to go through Dallas in an open car, and we thought there was going to be trouble, and we had the party had warned him about this. I've never known whether or not that was true, whether or not that was the whole answer. I'll never know. They're both dead now, and Lyndon is dead. And, you know, Lyndon, one of the first things Lyndon did after he got into office was to go out to my uncle's house in Odessa and sit down and say, I am leaving Texas, but I am not leaving my power behind.
Right. Yeah.
He was very clear about that.
Yeah.
I still have a family photograph of him and my father and my siblings standing there looking fairly unhappy, actually. So anyway, you know, you just wonder what all went on. And I think that there were so many people with so many different reasons. Here's one thing that I heard from Stanton Friedman, that Kennedy had told Marilyn Monroe the UFO secrets, mm-hmm. and she had in turn told them to a screenwriter she knew in Mexico, who had mm-hmm. called friends and said he knew all of the secrets, and he was shortly thereafter he was killed. Dorothy Kilgallen, of course,
yes.
told everyone that she knew the secret of the assassination, and she was killed.
Yeah.
And she was murdered. There's no real question about that in my mind.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. I think that's very clear.
But you know what happened? It's like the surface of the world was scraped off for a little bit, and something very dark underneath moved to close that up immediately. And to do that, it had to kill Kennedy and his brother.
Yes, and my take on the whole thing lately is that we have been living since Kennedy. I do think that that was a coup d'etat.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, I even lay out the case for it in the LBJ Conspiracy to Kill Kennedy book. But I think we've been living through one connected arc of American history from the Kennedy assassination up to and perhaps including the election of Trump. And, you know, I'm not a Trump fan. I voted for the man, but only reluctantly. But the thing that strikes me is we're seeing such fissures and fractures within the deep state that I do think that that arc of history is, one way or another, it's coming to an end. But I do think we've been living, you know, kind of sleepwalking through history the last few decades since the Kennedy assassination, because it's very clear, you know, you stop and think of all the things that have happened in that
right.
time period to indicate that this is not really a functioning republic. It's a functioning oligarchy. It's a functioning plutocracy.
Well, it might be, yeah, who knows what it is, but it's certainly not a republic, that's for sure.
No. No,
you know, I knew as soon as Clinton said that she was going to reveal the UFO secrets that she would lose the presidency.
Yeah.
Lose the election. Bernie Sanders made the same claim a few days ago, a few weeks ago. Mm. If he's the nominee, the Democrats will lose again for the same reason. No one who does that or promises that is going to win the presidency. The last one to promise that was Jimmy Carter. And Stanton, after he didn't do it, actually asked him face to face at one point, and he refused to discuss the matter. He has never been willing to discuss the matter since.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why he's still around, because this is more than sensitive.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of why it's so sensitive that people in high places would be killed or their careers destroyed to preserve that secret?
Well, I'm going to walk right off the end of the twig of high-octane speculation here. I've thought about this question for a number of years, but increasingly I'm coming to think that at some point people inside of the deep state in this country made some sort of contact, but it was not what they were expecting. I think they slowly have woken up that they made contact with, let's just put it very bluntly, demons or demonic entities or something of that nature. I'm increasingly inclined to that view for a variety of reasons that be, I think, kind of long-winded. But if the reason I came to that conclusion in a nutshell is that there's something that bothers me about most, not all, but about most of the literature that I've read about contact experience, and that is that it seems to me to want to exclude from humanity our God-given sense of being in the image and likeness of God, and to exclude from humanity any understanding of the transcendent, the beautiful, the good, the true, and so on and so forth. There are aspects of it that to me look very much like second or third century Gnosticism in some cases. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. You know, I've changed over the years several times back and forth on what I think is going on, and I might change tomorrow, you know. But I do think that that's ultimately what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people that I think, like it or not, have given themselves over to a kind of possession, and that they're willing to do anything and crawl into bed with anyone or anything that will give them power.
Or they have been trapped, because this, the dark side is like flypaper. I'm quite familiar with it because I've been living with the visitors consciously in my life for 30 years, and I am definitely not involved with any dark side at all. It has made many probes, let's put it that way, into my life. But I do know this. You know, there's a And Free Dreamlanders, we're about to leave you behind, at least for this week, if not forever, hopefully not forever, because I love you and I want you to stay with us week by week. In any case, there's somebody else here besides the dark side. Let me put it that way. There has to be, or I don't think I would still be alive. I have, there was a crop formation laid down some years ago called the Crabwood Formation because of its location that has the statement in it in ASCII code, beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises, much pain, but still time. Believe there is good out there. We oppose deception. And that resonated tremendously with me because my experience of the visitors I am involved with is an absolute hatred of lies and deception of all kinds and a constant seeking through my mind and my work and my life for any kind of deceptive inaccuracies. Mm-hmm. Now, that formation has been debunked as man-made. It may be man-made, but if it is man-made, and this is quite possible, it was made by people who are absolutely not part of our normal civilization and have technology and skills and knowledge that is beyond, way beyond where we are now. And I refer back now to the implant that's in my left ear, put in by a parent in my labs, but having a tremendously positive influence in my life, which I'm going to get into in my own new book, which I'm working on now, A New World. Okay, Free Dreamlanders, we're going to go on now down a dark, dark path indeed that is being tread right now in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. But we're going to go a lot deeper because we're going to go into something called the Finders and what they are and what this horrific underground of child abuse among the rich and powerful is really all about, because it is there, and the tip of that iceberg is in process of being exposed right now. It's not going to be exposed completely. They will back off in the end, but just now, there are some investigations that are still pretty healthy. Free Dreamlanders, thank you for staying with us all this time for a whole hour of your lifetimes. Please subscribe and keep on keeping on. Subscribers, fasten your seatbelts because we're going down a very dark path right now.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.